Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. This year's rain and snow season continues to amaze and for some, annoy. After a glorious, sunny, but chilly weekend here in Northern California, you may have heard on the news or just noticed on your phone's weather app that we are in for another rain and snowmaker this week. Another atmospheric river, yes, another one, is headed our way. And while it's been a blessing for our state's drought needs, the relentless storms have caused problems up and down the state. Case in point, Yosemite. The national park has seen an unreal amount of snow this season, so much so that roads were closed, buildings were snowed in, and essential services cut off or compromised, forcing the park to shut down to visitors. But earlier this month, Yosemite partially reopened. But if you have spring break plans or just were thinking of visiting Yosemite, an update is needed, especially with another storm headed our way. Yosemite Park Ranger Scott Gedeman is a 32-year veteran of the National Park Service, the last 20 years of which at Yosemite. Good morning.
Good morning, Vicky. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. Okay, Ranger Gedeman, what are the conditions currently at Yosemite?
Well, it's absolutely beautiful. Here in Yosemite Valley, we've got blue skies. The roads are in good shape. But as you mentioned, there's still a lot of snow. We've been able to clear a lot of the walkways. But for example, Curry Village, we haven't been able to reopen it. We've still got some areas closed. And we're literally still assessing some of the impacts from the last several atmospheric rivers.
Yeah, with another one coming very shortly. So take us back to February when Yosemite closed on the 25th. I mean, we saw those photos on Twitter. I mean, some locations had up to 15 feet of snow. Have most places been able to dig out or are crews kind of still behind because of the continuous numbers of storms that we've been having?
Well, the short answer is all of the above. You know, going back, we had the atmospheric rivers, as people remember, back in January, and then the huge storms. Those huge storms basically forced us to close the park. We had everything from rock falls, debris flows, rock slides, damage to roadways, all kinds of impacts. And so when it got to the point where we just had to close the roads, that rocks were on roads, ice, it wasn't safe for people. So since then, our amazing road crews have been able to clear roads. We've gotten the roads into Yosemite Valley opened, but a lot of places we still can't clear because there's simply too much snow.
Given that you've been the spokesperson for Yosemite National Park for 27 years now, where does the snow season rank in all of the years you've been there?
Well, this is far and away the most snow that I've ever seen. It's interesting that I've been saying that for a little while and hearing some of my colleagues up and down the Sierra say the same thing. Some friends, for example, in Lake Tahoe and Mammoth and down in Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks, which are still closed, by the way, due to storm impacts. So it's definitely been the biggest snowpack I've seen. And in fact, this weekend, April 1st, is the final snow survey of the year. And that will give us the number. So sometime early next week, we'll have a number of exactly how much snow we got.
You brought up Sequoia Kings Canyon. Are you in, you know, regular communication with national parks across California?
We are. It's interesting because when we look at resources, and by resources, I mean people, you know, we were fortunate to have people come here from other parks, from our regional office, the same as Sequoia. You know, as people know, with parks like Yosemite, Sequoia, Kings Canyon, Lassen Volcanic National Park, these incredible national parks that millions of people come to visit. At the same time, it's incredibly challenging to keep these places open and safe. And so, as you mentioned, the snow's been wonderful. That we've needed the snowpack, we've needed the rain, but the impact to the roads, we've had damage to buildings, damage to fences, but thankfully, we've only had one minor injury and some property damage, but not a lot. But our friends down in Sequoia, for example, have roads undermined, have a lot of buildings damaged, and they're going to be closed for a little while longer now.
Yeah, I think front of mind might be that, you know, huge snowpack. But here in Sacramento, we've also really felt and seen the impacts from these systems, mainly from the winds. How has Yosemite fared with extreme winds this season, or has the biggest impact been the snow?
That's a great question. It's again, the answer is all of the above. And what I mean by that is we had the huge snow. And so, for example, some of the tent cabins, for folks know, canvas tent cabins at Curry Village have collapsed simply due to the weight of the snow. And with some of these systems, we have had a fair amount of wind. And so this wind has basically knocked trees down. So we've had tree branches that have gone into roofs. We have had some impacts with trees falling, but nothing major. And so for us, it's a question of both the wind, and also people need to realize that even if there's not a lot of wind, a lot of these tree branches are breaking simply due to the weight of the snow. The snow load is so huge. A lot of these, you know, pine trees, oak trees, things like that are used to having snow, but just the sheer volume and the weight of the snow is causing a lot of these, what we call tree failure or branch failure, where the weight of the snow knocks these branches down. So it creates a safety concern, but at the same time, it's just part of living in Yosemite.
Yeah. I mean, given that you're in an all of the above situation for pretty much the first 3 months of 2023, what are you anticipating, given that we have another atmospheric river coming earlier this week? I believe tomorrow is when it's forecasted.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, again, we've been preparing. It's been interesting because, you know, over the past several weeks, it's been both literally digging out from the last series of storms and prepping for the atmospheric river. And by prepping, I mean, you know, placing sandbags in low-lying areas. You know, in the park, we know, for example, of campgrounds that have a tendency to get a lot of water in some buildings. And so we anticipate the best that we can. So we're both digging out, continuing to repair roads, prepping for the incoming atmospheric river the best that we can. And just our main message to visitors is if you come to the park, just be flexible and be prepared. We're planning to stay open, but at the same time, if we get more rockfalls or debris flows, the park could close at any time. So we're asking people just to be extra prepared. And by extra prepared, we mean everything from chains for your vehicle to shoes with good traction to layers of clothing to extra food, extra water. You know, we always ask people to be prepared, but in this changing weather conditions, it's even more important for people to come to Yosemite or really anywhere in the Sierra to have the preparations done and know that the weather changes quickly around here.
Given that you partially reopened a little over a week ago on March 18th, how has the experience been like for visitors? You touched upon how they should prepare. What should they expect when it comes to what's open and what's not open?
And that's another great question. Visitors are having a lot of fun. We're not seeing huge amounts of visitation because we just reopened. But basically, Yosemite Valley is open. You know, yesterday afternoon, for example, I saw people out with sleds and throwing snowballs. And so for the most part, Yosemite Valley is open and people can get around. But going up toward Crane Flat, of course, the Tuolumne Meadows area is closed, as it always is, and will open in the summer. The Glacier Point Road is closed, but Wawona is open, and most of the areas in Yosemite Valley are open for visitors to see. And I'll add this very quickly, too. One of the bonuses right now is the incredible waterfalls. With this huge snowpack and atmospheric rivers, we're seeing waterfalls, for example, noticing Bridal Veil Fall, Ribbon Fall. A lot of these waterfalls are basically spring conditions. And although we're technically in spring, we're seeing some really high waterfall levels right now. And it's just spectacular to see the huge waterfalls and the snow.
Yeah, the first time I met you was like 6 years ago, and it was due to these wonderful waterfalls in the park, like these ephemeral waterfalls. It was really exquisite to take in, and it is a rare sight. So that's actually promising, especially given Yosemite is attached to these wonderful small towns like Groveland and Mariposa. Do you have a better sense of how this is impacting the local economy?
Well, sure. You know, as you mentioned, so many of these, what we call the gateway communities, Mariposa, Oakhurst, Sonora, a lot of their economy is based upon the park. And so it certainly impacted them with the closure. We were closed for 3 weeks and were able to reopen first Highway 140 and the rest of the park. So a lot of these communities really depend on the tourism. So they were impacted. But now that we're reopened, we've got the waterfalls going. They've been really great. We've been working real closely with them. And clearly, this was a situation that not only were some of the impacts here in the park, but, you know, places like Mariposa and Sonora. Mariposa, for example, had extensive damage. A lot of trees fell during the windstorms. They had some road damage. And so this has really impacted everybody. And so what I've been noticing throughout this whole event, both inside and outside the park, is just how everybody has come together. It's been an incredible community spirit. People are checking on each other. People are having the best attitude. You know, we all keep saying we love the snow and we need it, but we don't need it all right now. But again, everybody's just watching out for each other, and the surrounding communities understand, and they've been great to work with, and we're really looking forward to a great spring and summer.
Finally, Ranger Gettleman, you know, when people plan to come to Yosemite, that can be a year in advance or longer. I mean, you have tourists from all over the world. What, any words of wisdom for someone hoping to make plans later this year from spring break through the summer and fall?
Sure. We're not doing reservations this summer, and so the in-park accommodations and campgrounds are incredibly popular and sell out quickly. And in fact, some of the campgrounds are not open yet because they're under snow. And so there's a lot of great opportunities. And the best advice I give is just plan ahead. You mentioned some of the gateways. There's some great accommodation options in the gateway community surrounding Yosemite. There's wonderful options for camping. For example, we're surrounded on three sides by national forests. There's some BLM land, so there's a lot of opportunities. So my suggestion is to just get creative, be flexible, plan ahead the best that you can, because as always, we're anticipating a busy summer, but we're certainly excited to have the visitors back and see the incredible beauty of Yosemite Valley.
Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And that is Yosemite Park Ranger Scott Gettleman. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. In Placer County, a support group for LGBTQ plus youth and parents has become the center of a heated debate about what it means to create a safe space for queer children. Roseville Joint Unified High School District cut ties with The Landing Spot, a non-religious support group led by Pastor Casey Tinnen, following a video released by Project Veritas. On its website, Project Veritas calls itself a nonprofit journalism enterprise, but they're also known as a right-wing group that conducts hidden video stinks. The video that we're talking about was an edited interview with Pastor Tinnen at what appears to be a restaurant, framing his work as dangerous. In a statement, Pastor Tinnen says in part that two Project Veritas activists masqueraded as parents seeking help and support for their transgender child and proceeded to illegally record their conversation and then edit it to discredit the church. Following the release, Roseville Joint Unified made the decision to share the video in a district wide email sent to families, disclosing that they not only cut ties with The Landing Spot, but they also alerted Roseville Police and Child Protective Services. All of this prompted a passionate school board meeting on Thursday, where more than 100 students and adults packed the room, speaking for and against the district's decision. We're going to hear from the school board president for Roseville Joint Unified in just a moment. But first, The Landing Spot was actually a guest on Insight last summer, on the heels of Roseville becoming the site of the first ever Pride Festival in Placer County. So we're going to begin by listening back to part of that conversation. First, we'll start off with Alex, who at the time was a current youth member.
A place like The Landing Spot is very much important to a place like Placer County. And I think one of the major reasons for that is due to the fact that Placer County is mostly comprised of a lot of conservative people, which can also comprise of a lot of non-LGBT friendly people. The reason why I went there was just because of the fact that, like, I felt lost at a time, because during the school I was in, I got beat up and I got food thrown at me, and I felt lost and I didn't know where to go. And then my mom, bless her soul, she was basically like saying there's this area called the landing spots that you can head to. And it was one of the best decisions I have made. I've met so many wonderful people. I've met Pastor Casey. I've met my current boyfriend, and I've met just all these other new people, all these other brilliant minds. And just being a part of a place like that is so important to me.
And that is Alex, who was a current youth member of the Landing Spot when he joined Insight last summer back in June. He was also joined by Susan, a parent of the Landing Spot, to share how it shaped the relationship that she has with her son.
He's transgender, and when he came out to us, I didn't know what to do or where to go as a parent. You don't know what you don't know until you need to know it. And so I had heard of the Landing Spot because of my son. I looked up online, found Pastor Casey, and he immediately helped get me resources. We also have a parents group, so parents can come in and get support and find out how to walk this new path that they might not have expected to be a part of. And the growth that I saw with my son, it gave him the confidence. It was like the child, I didn't know who I was missing. There was a piece of my child that wasn't there. And as he grew and as he transitioned and he became himself, it's like this whole new person arrived that I didn't realize wasn't there. So just the camaraderie and the support, the parents group is so vital to walk into those very first meetings scared to death and not knowing anything about the path you're on, and to look into the eyes of other parents who walked that path and they're in your shoes too.
And that was a conversation that we had here on Insight last summer with a Placer County student and parent of the Landing Spot, a non-religious support group for LGBTQ plus youth created by Pastor Casey Tennant. Okay, so now that we have a good foundation about what we're diving into and talking about, we're going to learn more about Roseville Joint Unified's decision to cut ties with the Landing Spot. Joining us now is School Board President Pete Constant. Thank you for making the time.
Oh, thank you for having me. And good morning, Vicki.
Good morning. Okay, so the school board meeting last week on Thursday was heated, to say the least. It was very passionate. You and your colleagues attempted to allow everyone who wanted to speak to actually be able to take part in public comment. You almost achieved that, but the meeting, after going on for about 95 minutes, it abruptly ended when arguments broke out, with eight speakers remaining. You've had the weekend now to reflect. What was the big message that you took away?
Well, I think it's first important to say that the board really did want to hear from every single person. And as you know, it's rare, in fact, probably extremely unique, that in what we did in stopping our meeting, putting aside all normal business and telling the community we want to hear from you, and dedicating the entire meeting with no limits on time to provide the community to talk to us. You know, it's really unfortunate that in these times we have folks who just are not tolerant of other people's viewpoints. It was very difficult to watch folks on both sides of the issue speak over, boo, hiss, and try and stop other people's speech. And I think a lot of times people forget that school boards are an extension of the government, and we have an obligation to protect the rights of every single person to come and petition their government. I mean, it's one of our core foundations of our government, the First Amendment, the right to petition your government, the right to have your voice heard. And we tried to provide that. And like you said, we did it. Unfortunately, only eight people didn't get a chance to speak before the meeting sort of went off the rails. But in addition to providing that foundation and that forum for free speech, we also have to ensure that we don't let things get out of hand and that we maintain decorum. And we simply couldn't continue the meeting given the emotions that had gotten so high.
Given that the subject of this conversation was about the video from Project Veritas, and it was a highly edited interview, it also had a point of view. Why did the district make the decision to share it with families? Did you reach out to Pastor Tinnin beforehand?
Well, I want to tell you, we did not share the video with families. That's one of the many falsehoods that is being put out there in this discussion. It's important to know that our district paused our work and stopped our relationship with the Landing Spot back on February 15th, weeks before this video came out. And it was completely unrelated to the concerns that have arisen. What we had found as a board and the administration, the Landing Spot had become operating on our schools for a number of years, but it was an informal relationship at first, and it started at one school and moved to many sites. And what we had found is two things. One, is that we didn't have an operating agreement or a memorandum of understanding that's required when we have organized groups working on our campus and working directly with our students. And that was an issue we wanted to make sure that we rectified. But we also had found out, and I know you had mentioned it in your opening comment as well, the Landing Spot had told us that they were a non-profit, non-religious organization, when in fact, they don't have that status. There is no separate organization of the Landing Spot legally from the church. So it is a religious organization. They may be operating some of their activities in a non-religious fashion, but they don't yet have a 501c3 nonprofit for the Landing Spot. And that poses some issues with us as well in the issues of having a religious organization have an established relationship on our campus with our students. So we were working on those, and that's what really caused the stop of the relationship. And then this video came up.
So can you clarify something for me? This was on the Nextdoor Roosevelt feed. It said RJUHSD families, a message, and then saying that the district, and this is when they brought up the video. And then I believe it's the bottom of it says John Becker, superintendent, P. Constant board president, which is you. So the video wasn't shared by the district or wasn't alerted to families?
Well, I think we referenced the video, but there's a distinct difference between referencing the existence of a video, which you have to understand was the result of hundreds of people contacting the school district concerned about the video. That's distinctly different than sharing the video and promoting a video or a viewpoint from Project Veritas. The school district never did that.
Got it. Thank you for that. By my rough count, all the people that you listened to on Thursday, there was like roughly 45 people who took part in public comment. The majority were adults, but the school board and you chose to start with students first so they can get to their homework. So we're going to listen to part of what three students had to say in the order that they addressed you and the rest of the school board.
Right. When people decide to spread hate, our solution shouldn't be to remove everything that elicits that reaction. Our reaction shouldn't be to ban books, limiting students' educations, and shielding them from reality and robbing them of their safe spaces. Students are in high school for 4 years, and it is unrealistic to send them into a world where they think that whenever they are met with conflict and hate, they should surrender to it and appease the cruelty of these people. This is what we've seen from the district.
It is crazy to me that we cannot even have students on the panel today at this meeting because of the unsafe environment that, frankly, I should not even be in right now. I had multiple warnings of going to this board meeting today because of the groups that would be here today. I want all of our schools to accept and welcome every student who walks through our doors, regardless of race, gender, and sexuality. I want to set up the tone for the rest of the public comment by saying, let's keep this environment safe, respectful, and accepting. We have kids in this room. So if you want to protect our children, let's keep our comments appropriate. I do not want to be scared being in this room today. Thank you.
And I know I'm not going to change the world here, so I'm not going to try to. Instead, I am asking for anyone, anywhere, just to listen. I am 17 years old and queer, and I want to tell every single other queer person something. You don't deserve this. You don't deserve the few resources you have to be taken away from you. I know what it is like to be unsafe at school. A pride flag was burnt last year, and this district did effectively nothing to make us feel safer. I had to fight for 2 years to get a bathroom that I wouldn't get beat up in. In my time in this district, I tried to kill myself 4 times because I didn't feel welcome or loved or safe. I am lucky to have a family who loves every single piece of me. Not everyone is. I graduated early school last semester, not because of incredible grades or intelligence, but because I was tired of going to war instead of school every day. The Landing Spot and organizations like it are not grooming children. They are giving us a break from constantly fighting and trying to find our place in a world that has made it abundantly clear that they will not make space for us. This district can be a safe place, but it is not yet. You have the choice to make it one. Listen to me. If you are queer, I love you. I love you so much. Whatever the other people are going to say, pay it no mind. We deserve so much better than this, and you have the ability to make it happen. So I am begging you, please.
School Board President Constant, you are also a parent of 5 children at Roseville Joint Unified Schools. The children that you just heard from, they're telling you that they don't feel safe or supported. Are they right?
Well, everyone's right in their own feelings, so I would never challenge that. There's a few things that concern me. You heard the first speaker talk about book banning, and that's another one of those things that unfortunately is a fallacy, that our district has never banned a book. We've never even had it on the agenda, yet every meeting people come and accuse us of banning books, and it's unfortunate that Those type of things happen. We still have and are committed to maintaining wellness centers at every one of our high schools. We have licensed therapists on staff in our wellness centers. We have resources that are available that we refer students out to every single day. The landing spot was one of those resources that isn't there right now, but all of the other resources are there. We are doing our best to meet the needs of every student, students of the LGBTQA plus community, students in other communities. We have stated a firm commitment to that. The message that you referred to also indicated that. We've put that out a number of times to our community.
There were also parents who spoke at the board meeting with personal experience as well, attending the landing spot. We're going to listen just to one. There were so many people, but we're going to listen to a father who was not talking about his views on it, but was critical about how the district alerted families.
I'm a parent of a student and also was involved with the landing spot. When I read the email that was sent out from the district, I was both horrified and concerned that my child had either been subjected to abuse or exposed to illegal activity of some sort. For the district to call Roseville Police Department and Child Protective Services, I was convinced something horrific had taken place on campus through the landing spot. After reading the district's email, I immediately contacted the superintendent, and when I did not receive anything back after 24 hours, I emailed Mr. Constant, Mr. Becker, and other folks in the district to find out what type of abuse my child had been exposed to. Fortunately, yesterday afternoon, I received a call from Mr. Hastie at the district explaining to me what had happened. His information settled my nerves, as it was clear that any allegations of abuse or grooming were unfounded upon and unsubstantiated. With this said, I have seen nothing but positive come out of the landing spot and their support of both my wife and my child. I am horrified that the district would put out a statement that would insinuate that abuse had been taking place, all the while knowing that the claims were false and came from a group of individuals that have a different ideology than that of the landing spot.
Why did the district call Roseville Police and Child Protective Services?
Well, first, I would say reread that announcement we made, because there was no indications that we made allegations of abuse or grooming or anything like that. However, we do have a very close relationship with Roseville Police Department. We have police officers on our campuses in the city of Roseville, as well as Sacramento County and Placer County sheriffs on our campuses, on schools in those jurisdictions. We received, as I mentioned, a large number of emails from parents that were concerned with what they had seen in the videos. We merely advised the police department and CPS of these concerns that parents had been contacting us and said, quite frankly, this is not an area for our school district to make any objective conclusions from. If you believe there's something to follow up on, we're just letting you know that this happened. We have a longstanding relationship of doing things like that whenever there's anything outside of our purview.
It was also shared that the landing spot has received bomb threats. Families affiliated with the church say they've received death threats. Pastor Tinnen himself says Proud Boys have been outside of his home. Does any of this concern you?
Well, it's all concerning to me. The behavior of people is, in this instance, abhorrent. I mean, there's no reason that anyone should threaten violence upon anyone for any reason. The school district, as you know, had nothing to do with this video. What happened with Project Veritas and their distribution of the video and the reaction of people to that video is far outside the control of our school district. We don't condone it. We don't encourage it. We condemn that behavior. It should never happen in our community, no matter what your viewpoints are on any subject.
Finally, what would you say to LGBTQ plus students and their families within your district following all that has unfolded?
Well, I think it's important to know that they are welcome in our community. They always have been. They always will be. We will continue to provide supports for them. Many of us have members of their communities in our own family. We feel for them. Our heart goes out to them. We're here to help. The school district is just a bystander in a lot of this misinformation that has been going on and the unfortunate circumstances around the Project Veritas video. But I hope the district did convey that we do listen to all of our constituents. We want to hear from everyone. If a student is feeling unsafe, it's imperative they come to the office, go to the wellness center, notify a trusted adult at our school. We want to make sure they have the supports and the safety for them to not only succeed in life, but be safe at school while they're with us.
With hindsight, would you change anything that how the district handled this?
Well, I would love it if the video had never come out. But unfortunately, as many people who are upset on one side of the issue for the way we communicated, there's people on the other side just as upset by the way we communicated. We have 10,500 plus students in our district, 20,000 parents, and about 200,000 residents that live within our district. We just do our best to make sure that our students are safe, and we're focusing on educating our students. And we're going to continue to do that every day.
Mr. Constant, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Pete Constant is the school board president for Roseville Joint Unified. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. We're now going to bring in CAP Radio Sacramento Communities reporter Janelle Salonga. Good morning, Janelle.
Hey, Vicki. How's it going?
It is going good. Okay, so you followed the school board meeting last week as well. But outside of Roseville Joint Unified, there's also a larger debate that's happening across the state, across the country, when it comes to creating safe spaces for LGBTQ plus youth. What is the bigger picture that's taking place?
Well, I think one component of it is this idea of, you know, a divided understanding between where, who has agency in a family and over, what decisions are kind of made. So, for example, some parents might feel like they're the final authority on their kids' decisions, like at least before they turn 18 and potentially after. So, viewing children as a blank slate, wanting to share with them, your views and kind of impart those as the best views on life, whereas some other parents may provide more freedom to their kids to have agency over their own decisions. Even if there is kind of a division in what some parents believe and what their kids believe, just recognizing that, those divisions of belief are also rooted in the fact that each person kind of knows themselves best. And this is also a little bit, or this kind of discussion is also taking place against the backdrop of just a growing rise of anti-trans legislation in the country. Not necessarily in California, but just in general, there have been close to 500 bills introduced this year alone that would cause varying degrees of harm to trans people if passed. Hmm.
And we heard from students and parents who are concerned about the safety of queer students and their families, but there were also passionate comments supporting the district's decision to cut ties with the support group, even go further by calling police or alerting police and CPS. But these are, all of these are taking place within the same school board meeting. Do these polarized views go beyond just one school district?
Definitely. I mean, also in Placer County, the Western Placer Unified School District, where volunteers from the landing spot occasionally also worked with students at one specific school, like they cut ties with the landing spot as well after the video was released, citing parent concerns. And obviously, President Constant just laid out that the circumstances that led his district to cut ties with the landing spot were a little different than, the Western Placer Unified School District. So there is a distinction there. But in general, like he said, these discussions represent discussions that are taking place across the country.
Given that we dove into what's happening at Roseville Joint Unified, that's in Placer County, but there's other districts that at least optically, they're going in a different direction. You recently went to Sac City Unified, which raised the trans flag. What did you learn about the district's decision to do this?
Yeah, so the district decided to do that in honor of Trans Week of Visibility, which the board confirmed via resolution at a board meeting earlier this month. And that resolution creating that week was the first in the district's history in advance of Trans Day of Visibility, which is later this week on March 31st. And so the city actually also passed a resolution announcing Trans Week of Visibility in Sacramento the day after. But, you know, other districts and schools have raised the trans flag before. For example, in California, San Diego Unified School District. But this is the first time in the Sacramento region that this has happened. And, you know, though, for example, like the gay pride flag, which is the rainbow flag that is really common throughout the region or just in general, during June, which is Pride Month, has been raised before. Choosing to raise specifically the trans flag is, you know, a very direct statement of support from the district for, you know, standing in solidarity with its trans students amid that growing rise of anti-trans legislation across the country that I mentioned earlier. And so, you know, here's Sac City Unified School Board President Chinua Rhodes on what it meant to raise the flag.
We're all here today in solidarity and understanding that every student deserves to be seen, that every student deserves to be supported, and that every student deserves to be loved. And this is especially important for students who are historically most vulnerable. Our district's Trans Day of Visibility effort is a signal to our commitment and the commitment of our board to be inclusive, to be equitable minded, and be centered with our communities and our hearts.
Finally, Janelle, what do you want listeners to take away from this conversation and what's happening at school districts across Northern California?
Yeah, I mean, this is a conversation really about what safety looks like and whose ideas of safety, you know, are getting prioritized. I think I would ask, you know, people to consider, you know, some of the power dynamics at play here, like historically, who's had power in kids' lives, in society and in the country, and what has, you know, the quote unquote normal looked like, and what kinds of harm, you know, can occur to people who exist outside of that.
Janelle, thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Vicky.
Janelle Salonga is Cap Radio's Sacramento Communities reporter. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez, the greatest blues singer of her generation. That is how music critics and fans have described our next guest. Shamika Copeland has become a powerhouse in blues, soul, and Americana universe. She's earned both awards and devoted fans with her commanding stage presence, a powerful yet soulful voice, and fearlessness in addressing some of our country's greatest social issues through music. Shamika has performed at the White House and in front of the United Nations General Assembly. This week, however, she and her band will be making a stop at the Auburn State Theater to perform songs from their latest album, Done Come Too Far.
The past is past. Had to move ahead. Let's start with the healing. Listen to this voice, strong and loud. We're all by knees. See us standing proud. Gonna keep on moving on without any fear. We ain't reached the top, but we can see it from here. From here, done come to
And Shamika Copeland joins us now ahead of her performance in the Foothills this Thursday. Shamika, welcome to Insight. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What a treat. So you're currently on tour. You're going to be in Auburn on Thursday. How is it going so far, the tour?
Oh, it's going really well. We've been having such a great time. So I'm excited to be doing some West Coast, a couple West Coast gigs.
Yeah. Given that you released your first album, Turn Up the Heat, in 1998, when you reflect on your career, 2 decades, 9 albums, 15 blues music awards, and 5 Grammy nominations later, how do you take all that in? What stands out to you?
You know, I'm just grateful that I'm able to do what I love. I think that's just a real true blessing. So I'm very happy about that.
Your father is renowned blues singer and guitarist Johnny Copeland, was immensely influential nurturing your career in music, bringing you onto the stage as young as 8 years old. And by 16, you were his opening act. He passed away in 97. But in what ways is your father still with you and influencing the music that you do today?
Oh, he's with me in every way. In fact, today would have been his 86th birthday. So, he's with me. He's with me. I feel like I got 2 powerful angels watching over me. I lost my mom on the day this record came out, August 19th of last year. And they're both with me. They're both with me. Yeah.
Your latest album, as you mentioned, was Done Come Too Far, released in August. How do you describe it to listeners?
You know, I feel like it's my entire personality. All my records are that way, but this one has the broad range of Shamika Copeland from, you know, the very serious to the very funny. It's just a little bit of everything. And I really enjoyed making this record.
This follows a Grammy-nominated album, Uncivil War, which you released in 2020. Is it similar or different to your previous album?
They're all very different, but similar. I don't know how to explain. You have to listen to all 3 of them, right? Because it started, for my entire career, I've been making albums that say something. You know, if I'm not talking about social injustice or date rape or religious hypocrites, after I had my little guy, who's 6 now, after I had him, everything kind of changed for me in the sense that, you know, you kind of turn into Mother Teresa because you want to make the world a better place for these little people to be in. And I did an album called America's Child. So on it, I did We Ain't Got Time for Hate. And then I feel like things just got worse in the world, right? So I ended up doing Uncivil War. And then, oh my goodness, it's just things got even worse. you know, you think you can have a departure, but no, there was so many more things to say. I did Uncivil War, and I just said, okay, well, I guess we got to keep on going with this. And that's why we did Done Come Too Far.
We're going to listen to a track from the new album. This is Too Far to Be Gone, featuring Sonny Landreth on guitar.
A small thing like a seat on a bus changed life for the rest of us. A tiny woman that you never met put us on the road, but we ain't there yet. A brave soul is long gone, but a spirit's marching on. We done come too far to be gone. Come too far to be gone. If you think we're too far to be gone. Hand in hand, yours and mine, it's God's love on the line. Now we're miles from our first steps, about as tired as you can get. But as sure as day turns night, we'll keep moving till we make it right.
I imagine no one is in their seats during your performances, Shamika.
People have a real good time. I think we get some folks getting up dancing all the time, and that makes me happy because I can't dance. So I really love to see other people doing it.
you take it in, you know, but you have a powerhouse voice, and you're also backed by such a talented band. What can you tell us about them?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've had my guys in April will make 25 years. I've been with Arthur Nielsen. That's my guitar player. 19 years, my bass player, Kevin Jenkins. 14 years, my other guitarist, Willie Scanlon. And my drummer, Robin Gould, 10 years. So we have so much fun and we just really love what we do. And we have a ball.
I can definitely hear that. We're actually going to continue the ball. We're going to take a listen to another song on the album. This one is called Gula Geechee. Tell us more about this one before we play a little bit of it.
So I did a song called Clotilda's on Fire, and that was about the descendants from the Clotilda down off the coast of Alabama. And so I really just love educational songs. Our country's so rich in culture. We have so many amazing just little pockets in this country where there's a lot of wonderful, just amazing history. And so that's why I wanted to do this one about the Gullah people in South Carolina.
Jumped a broom, me and my man in that dusty room. Side by side, can't see to can't see. Till 1 week later, they took him from me. Chains shook as they dragged him away. All my dreams died that day. Gullah, Gullah Geechee, from across the sea. Gullah, Gullah Geechee, still trying to be free. All day long trying not to slip, just to avoid the snap of the whip. Out at Hush Harbor, sun red for down. Everybody praying, our lips to the ground. Give us the strength to last one more day. And we hear you call, still away, still away. Gullah, Gullah Geechee.
I gotta say, that one is probably my favorite song. It's so rich and soulful, and it's just wonderful. You talk about the history of this song. You're also going to be performing at Auburn State Theater, which has also been a cultural hub in the Sierra foothills for 90 years. It also has a rich history. When you perform in venues like this, do you feel that history on stage?
I do. I mean, I think that every place has its own particular feeling. And yeah, I mean, you get it. You can get it. You can feel it when you're up there.
So that one was my favorite, but we're going to end with another song, which is our producer Nick Dobis's favorite from your new album. And this one is Nobody But You.
Okay.
Who can I depend on after all said and done? Who can I call?
What a treat, Shamika. Thank you so much for making the time to join us ahead of your performance in Auburn later this week.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to seeing everybody out. It's my first time playing at these places, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, people will be moving around and be feeling great by the time the show ends. I can assure you of that. Shamika Copeland is an award-winning blues, soul, and Americana singer. She's going to be performing this Thursday at the Auburn State Theater. You can find more information on our Insight page. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the conversation, you can email us, insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Nick Dobis and Victor Corral Martinez, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Megan Benata. Insight's technical director and engineer is Mark Jones. Our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. And I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great Monday. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.